हरे
Krishna, okay, so Yudhishthira, then now he has said, he has come forward and said that after hearing Krishna's point, now that, you know, I'm not, how you say, desirous of getting, having the Rajasuya sacrifice. And then, and saying that, you know, your Krishna, he's afraid of Jarasandha, so then what about his position? He'll naturally be afraid. So then Bhima says that, you know, don't worry, because between the three of us, between Krishna's policy, between my strength and Arjuna's ability to triumph, then everything will be okay. So now Krishna speaks. Krishna then said, "One that is immature in understanding seeketh the fruition of his desire without an eye on what may happen to him in the future. It is seen that no one forgiveth for that reason a foe that is immature understanding and inclined to serve his own interests. It has been heard by us that in the Krita age, having brought everyone under his subjugation, Yovanasvin, by the abolition of all taxes, Bhagiratha, by his kind treatment to his subjects, Kartavirya, by the energy of his asceticism, Lord Bharat, by his strength and valor, and Maruta, by his prosperity, all these five became emperors. But, O Yudhishthira, thou who covetest the imperial dignity deserves it, not by one, but by all these qualities, namely victory, protection afforded to the people, virtue, prosperity, and policy. Know, O Bulla, the Kuru race, that Jarasandha, the son of Vridadratta, is even such, in other words, a candidate for the imperial dignity. 100 dynasties of kings have become unable to oppose Jarasandha. He therefore may be regarded to be an emperor for all his strength. Kings that are wearers of jewels worship Jarasandha with presents of jewels. But wicked, from his childhood, he is scarcely satisfied with such worship. Having become the foremost of all, he attacketh yet with violence kings with crowns on their heads. Nor is there seen any king from whom he taketh not tribute. Thus hath he brought under his sway nearly 100 kings. How can, O son of Prita, any weak monarch approach him with hostile intentions? Confined in the temple of Shiva, and offered a sacrifice unto him like so many animals, do not these monarchs, dedicated to that god, feel the most poignant misery? O bull of the Bharata race, a Kshatriya that dieth in battle is ever regarded with respect. Why shall we not, therefore, meet together and oppose Jarasandha in battle? He hath already brought 86 kings, 14 only are wanting to complete 100. As soon as he obtaineth those 14, he will begin his cruel act. He shall be, he that shall be to obstruct that act will surely win blazing renown. And he that will vanquish Jarasandha will surely become the emperor of all the Kshatriyas." Section 16. Yudhishthira said, "Desirous of the imperial dignity, but acting from selfish motives and relying upon courage alone, how, O Krishna, can I dispatch ye under Jarasandha. So now he's looking at it from his side. But, you know, if I'm desiring this crown, so how can I send you that you'll be, you know, then have to fight with this king? You know, how would it be proper that I want this and then this should happen? Both Bhima and Arjuna I regard as my eyes, and thee, O Janardana, as my mind. How shall I live deprived of my eyes and mind? Yama himself cannot vanquish in battle the mighty host of Jarasandha, that is endued, besides, with terrible valor. What valor can ye exhibit against it? This affair that promises to terminate otherwise may lead to great mischief. It is my opinion, therefore, that the proposed task should not be undertaken. Listen, O Krishna, to what I, for one, think. O Janardana, desisting from this act seemeth to me to be beneficial. My heart today is afflicted. The Rajasuya appeareth to me difficult of accomplishment. Vaishampayana said, Arjuna, who had obtained that excellent of bows, and that couple of inexhaustible quivers, and that car with that banner, as also that assembly room, now addressed Yudhishthira and said, I have obtained, O king, a bow, weapons, arrows, energy, allies, dominions, fame, and strength. Those are always difficult of acquisition, however much they may be desired. Learned men of repute always praise in good society nobleness of descent, but nothing is equal to might. Indeed, O monarch, there is nothing I like more than prowess. Born in a race noted for its valor, one that is without valor is scarcely worthy of regard. One, however, possessed of valor, that is born in a race not noted for it, is much superior to the former. He, O king, is a Kshatriya in everything who increaseth his fame and possessions by the subjugation of his enemies. And he that is possessed of valor, though destitute of all other merits, will vanquish his foes. One, however, that is destitute of valor, though possessed of every other merit, can scarcely accomplish anything. Every merit exists by the side of valor in an incipient state. Concentration of attention, exertion, and destiny exist as the three causes of victory. Right, so here's those three that we always hear about. Concentration of attention, or sometimes it's also known, it's mentioned as focus, exertion, you know, so that's your endeavor, and destiny, right? In other words, we know what will actually happen, that's according to the laws of nature. Those are the three, right? So, in other words, your concentration is there because you know your position, you know the position of the others, you know what are all the different elements, you know how they relate to each other, and you are focused that you want to get a result from that, okay? So that's your sambandha, right? You know everything, and there's an interest to work within it. So that interest creates the focus. No interest, no focus, right? Or you don't know the field, therefore no focus. Right? Then endeavor. Without endeavor, nothing is gained. Right? That's why he's putting so much point on prowess. Right? The Kshatriyas get everything because of prowess. They have all the qualities, they know the Shastras, but it's their prowess that makes them Kshatriyas. The same qualities without the prowess, that's the Brahmins. Right? Though they have those qualities in much greater amount, you know, except for someone like Yudhishthira. But this is the difference between the two. Right? The Brahmin's prowess is in that he will, you know, perform his yajnas, perform his duties. But he's not about to fight over some, you know, mundane, you know, wealth. Right? His wealth is Shastra. His wealth is austerity. Okay. So those three, yes, go ahead.
How do we apply valor in our spiritual life?
How do we apply valor? You have a duty, you know it's to be done, you don't get mental about it, you just do it. Means if you've contemplated it, it's all right, you just do it. Does that make sense? Because when you're doing something,
then you get accomplished things. If you're doing something and you see a need to adjust, you can adjust it while it's moving, right? You can't turn the car. The car is in the wrong direction. Can you turn it when it's stopped? Right. So when you start moving and it's in the wrong direction, which is it going to go in the right direction? No. But it's by it's moving in the wrong direction, now you can turn it to the right. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the whole point is only through action is anything accomplished. So even while you're performing the action, if you're intelligent, you're sensitive to the situation, you'll adjust it as it's moving. Right? Does that make sense? So that commitment like that, that's your focus, and that energy to do that, that's your prowess. Right? So here, you know, prowess will mean fighting and this and that. Doesn't have to mean that. Prowess just means you're willing to get out there and make a stand. You know, you think something, you're willing to stand by that. You know, unless, of course, it's foolish. The king's not in a good position, he won't use prowess if it's not going to work. If there's no chance of it working, he won't use it. He'll use diplomacy and other things. But if there's a chance it'll work, he will take it. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So in other words, if you thought out your plan, it's good, then you just do it. Right? You don't worry, well, maybe what if it doesn't? That doesn't. What if so many things? You know. Okay. As it said, it says, a coward dies a thousand deaths. What's a not coward? A brave man dies but once. So that's the thing. Cowards are always dying because everything makes them die. You know, it's like, oh, I can't do this. Oh, this. Oh, that. Like that. So they spend their whole life dying. Right? Well, the brave man lives his life and dies at the end. Does that make sense? But the point is it's always been pointed out, it's with intelligence. Right? The person who just out of sentiment, you know, just runs in there, that's not the right thing. You know what I'm saying? Okay. One, however, that is possessed of valor doth not yet deserve success, if he acts carelessly. Okay, so that's the point. It is for this that an enemy subdued with strength sometimes suffers death at the hands of his foes, because of his carelessness. He may be more powerful, but if he's careless, then he can still have problems. Right? As meanness overtakes the weak, so folly sometimes overtakes the strong. A king, therefore, that is desirous of victory should avoid both these causes of destruction. Right? Another being mean and being, or weak, actually here. Weak and being, and folly. If, for the purpose of our sacrifice, we endeavor to slay Jarasandha and rescue the kings kept by him for a cruel purpose, there is no higher act which we could employ ourselves in. If, however, we do not undertake the task, the world will always think us incompetent. We have certainly the competence, O king. Why should you, therefore, regard us as incompetent? Those that have become munis, desirous of achieving tranquility of souls, obtain yellow robes with ease. So, if we vanquish the foe, the imperial dignity will easily be ours. We shall, therefore, fight the foe. So his point is that if we don't make that endeavor, everyone will say, you could have, why didn't you do it? Right? Notice in all this, the leaving out that, you know, Krishna Arjuna just defeated all the demigods and all that. But, you know, that's just part of the pastime. Because the mood is right now, what the mood is in. So they're working on that mood. Because Krishna established the mood. Section 17, yes.
How would it change the mood if they brought that point in?
How would it change the mood?
It would just bring in more prowess and everything like that. But you have to come to that. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you always start at the mood that you're in. Whatever is the present mood, you start with that. Because that's the mood others are in. Then from that, then you adjust. You know what I'm saying? Because here it's not a matter of, you know, it means you have a hierarchy, but it's not like it's a teacher, you know, or Bhishma, or someone like that of authority can just come in and just say, you know, do this, and, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So this is a matter of they're basically equals. They're friends. And so then it's a discussion amongst them. So the common mood, then you work with that. Then you can move it to whatever direction you want. Does that make sense? Otherwise, then where will be the camaraderie? Does that make sense? Vasudev said, Arjuna hath indicated what the inclination should be of one that is born in the Bharata race, especially of one who is the son of Kunti. Right? So he's basically saying, now he's indicated the mood, so this is the proper mood. We know that when death will overtake us, we knoweth not when death will overtake us, in the day, in the night, or in the day. Nor have we ever heard that immortality hath been achieved by desisting from fight. Right? We haven't heard that anybody's lived any longer by not fighting. This, therefore, is the duty of men, namely, to attack all enemies in accordance with the principles laid down in the ordinance. This always gives satisfaction to the heart. Aided by good policy, if not frustrated by destiny, an undertaking becomes crowned with success. Right? So it says any good policy. So the policy is laid down by the principles, right? You have the principles, the duties that are there, the methods that are there. Then your policy is going to be how I practically apply that in my life. You make the endeavor. But it's up to destiny. So if destiny turns it the other way, then what can you do? You fought for the right cause. You know, that's what Prabhupada means by shooting the white rhinoceros. You know, you've gone out there to shoot the right rhinoceros. If you win, everybody will say, wow, he did the impossible. If he loses, then hey, what to do? You know, nobody does it. You know what I'm saying? But if you sit back and do nothing, then what's going to happen? Right? Everyone will say, yes, he said, sat back and do nothing. You know, his nebbishness, you know, like that. Nebbish is German for a nothing, right? So a person who does nothing is called a nebbish, like that. If both parties, aided by such means, encounter each other, one must obtain ascendancy over the other, for both cannot win or lose. A battle, however, if directed by bad policy, which again is destitute of the well-known arts, ends in defeat or destruction. So it's that, you know, you didn't plan it properly, and the arts being used. So even you plan it nice, but can you do what you're talking about? You know what I'm saying? In other words, you make a plan according to what you can also accomplish. Does that make sense? Yes, we'll do 108 yajna, you know, yajna. But do you have 108 priests that actually know how to do a yajna? You know what I'm saying? If one yajna is costing you, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 rupees to do it nicely, so how many is going to cost you 108? Right? Unless you get out the matchboxes and, you know, that kind of, you know, like that. Then. Does that make sense? Right? So, don't make plans that you also can't do. In other words, make your plans on policy, but your plan should be according to what actually you can accomplish. Like that. Okay? If again both parties are equally circumstanced, the result becomes doubtful. Both, however, cannot win. When such is the case, why should we not, aided by good policy, directly approach the foe and destroy him, like the current of the river, uprooting a tree? if this, now he's saying we're equal, right? So, you know, before it was he's greater, now he's saying we're equal, right?
If, distinguishing our own faults, we attack the enemy, taking advantage of his loopholes, why should we not succeed? Indeed, the policy of intelligent men is that one should not fight openly with foes that are extremely powerful and are at the head of their well-arrayed forces. This, too, is my opinion. If, however, we accomplish our purpose secretly, entering the abode of our foe and attacking his person, we shall never earn obloquy or oblique.
No, it's not
oblique. I know the definition. It is obloquy.
Yeah.
Of means against, and luki means to speak. So because he's been so unkind to all the other kings, people are slandering him, so he gets a disrespectful name. So people are speaking against him.
Oh, okay.
So he's correct.
Obloquy.
Speak against or to slander, to get disrespect.
Oh, I see. So we shall never earn obloquy. Means no one will ever speak badly of us. Okay, so now he's saying is that, okay, before we're talking about Jarasandha, all his armies, all his men, all the other kings, and in that battle it may be difficult to defeat him. But he says, now, yes, okay, so he's more powerful. So then we would never use that as our policy. So we will somehow or another get into his kingdom and attack him directly. So, you know, just attacking him as one person, then we can be successful, right? And because of our position and his position, then no one will speak badly of us. Right? In other words, Krishna had a plan. This is how he wants to do it. Therefore, he put up Jarasandha like that. Otherwise, he said, hey, Arjuna himself could defeat them all. Right? But Krishna just wants to run the pastime in this way. Does that make sense? That bull among men, Jarasandha, alone enjoyeth unfaded glory, like unto him who is the self in the heart of every created being. But I see his destruction before me. Desirous of protecting our relatives, we will either slay him in battle or shall ascend to heaven, being ourselves slain in the end by him. Right. So now you bring out the Kshatriya sentiments. We're going there to protect our families, so we will either slay him or be slain. Right. So. Like that. So you see so much going back and forth between the intelligence and then the mood. Because the point is it's in that mood that they're using their intelligence. Right? Does that make sense? So there's a natural mood of any order. So within that mood, then you make your plans. So whatever needs to be done. So the Shastric things, you bring out very nice revealed points and all that. Then that will be the Brahminical. The Kshatriya, it has to be this mood of that valor, that chivalry, those kind of religion, dharma, you know, that mood of, yes, we will go, we will do this, you know, that's all the thing, you know. And the Vaishyas, yes, we will make money, you know. But that one's not this one, it's this one. So it's like, you know, they all have their mudras, you know. And then for the Shudra, yes, I'll express myself. Like this and like that. So it's all, you know, so there's a mood that goes along with each of it. Okay.
Yudhishthira said, O Krishna, who is this Jarasandha? What is his energy and what is his prowess? That having touched thee, he hath not been burnt like an insect at the touch of fire. Right, so now Arjuna is, I mean, before Yudhishthira is just, oh, we can't do. Now he's been inspired. Now he's asking, who is this? Right? In other words, as soon as you're interested in knowing who the person is, then there's an interest in interaction. Right? If there's no interest, means that interaction, well, why do you, then you just talk about the circumstance. But when you start getting down to the individual, then it's you're willing to interact. Does that make sense?
Krishna said, hear, O monarch, who Jarasandha is.
What his energy, what is his prowess? And why also he hath been spared by us, even though he hath repeatedly offended us. right? Because he said, how could he survive because he's come and attacked you? There was a mighty king of the name Vridhadratha. Dratha, the lord of the Magadhas, proud in battle. He had 3 Akshahinis of truth. Handsome and endued with energy, possessed of affluence and prowess beyond measure, and always bearing on his person marks indicating installation at sacrifices. He was like a second Indra. In glory he was like unto Surya, in forgiveness like unto the earth, in wrath like unto the destroyer Yama, and in wealth like unto Vaishravana. Right? Because the king is supposed to have 8 qualities of the 8 demigods, so he just mentioned 4 of them. Right? So forgiveness like unto the earth. So if the king isn't forgiving, then he's actually not actually well situated. O thou foremost of Bharata race, the whole earth was covered by his qualities that descended upon him from a long line of ancestors, like the rays emanating from the sun. O bull of the Bharata's race, endued with great energy, that monarch married 2 twin daughters of the king of Kashi, both endued with the wealth of beauty. And that bull among men made an arrangement in secret with his wives that he would love them equally and would never show a preference for either. The lord of the earth, in the company of his 2 dearly beloved wives, both of whom suited him well, passed his days in joy like a mighty elephant in the company of 2 cow elephants, or like the ocean in his personified form between Ganga and Jamuna, also in personified forms. The monarch's youth, however, passed away in the enjoyment of his possessions, without any son being born unto him to perpetuate his line. What is the age bracket of youth? 16 to 30. Is that what you're going to say? Yeah, 16 to 30. So that means he crossed 30, he still didn't have a son, even with 2 wives. The best of monarch failed to obtain a son to perpetrate his line, his race, even by means of various auspicious rites and homas, and sacrifices performed with the desire for having an offspring. One day the king heard that the high-souled Chandra Kaushika, the son of Kakshivat of the illustrious Gotama race, having desisted from ascetic penances, had come in the course of his wanderings to his capital, and taken a seat under the shade of a mango tree. The king went unto that Muni accompanied by his 2 wives, and worshipping him with jewels and valuable presents, gratified him highly. That best of rishis, truthful in speech, and firmly attached to truth, then told the king, O king of kings, I have been pleased with thee. O thou of excellent vows, solicit a boon. King Vridhadratha then, with his wives, bending low unto that rishi, spoke these words, choked with tears in consequence of his despair of obtaining a child. O Holy One, forsaking my kingdom, I am about to go into the woods to practice ascetic penances. I am very unfortunate, for I have no son. What shall I do, therefore, with my kingdom or with a boon? Right, so always remember, in this is not as important that they have to have a son. You know what I'm saying? It means the son is to carry on the kingdom, right? That, or the other consideration is the son, because if they're going to go to the heavenly planets or they have relatives in the heavenly planets, they have to perform the Shraddha rites. Does that make sense? That's the importance. As devotees, it's not important. That should always be kept in mind. Right? That makes sense. As devotees, we're trying to attract someone who has the qualities of a devotee. You know, someone who will, you know, practice and make a difference. Right? That's what we're looking for. Right? That makes sense. Right? It's not that unless you have a son, then something's wrong, like that. You know, that may be your personal preference, but don't quote Shastra, right? Because the Shastra is saying son, for the purpose of the son will take care of the mother, the son will, you know, inherit the kingdom or take, you know, care of the family things, and the son will perform the Shraddha rites, because inheritance goes to who performs the Shraddha rite. Right? So the eldest son performs the Shraddha rite, that's why he gets the estate. And then he manages it and takes care of his brothers. Does that make sense? Or, if it's going to be divided up, then due to the, what is it? Progena. It's a word meaning means the senior.
Huh?
Yeah, primogenitor. Then that means he gets an extra portion because he does the Shraddha rite. Right? But that's, of course, if he has the proper qualities, he deals properly. If he doesn't do the Shraddha rite or he becomes bad, then he doesn't get that right. Does that make sense? Yes.
Married, if the quality of the oldest son is not so good, the younger son do the Shraddha rites?
Means this oldest son is supposed to do, but if he doesn't, then the youngest will do it. But then technically, then he becomes the senior. Right? So that's why you see is then in the whole line, then because he was doing the bidding of the father, then Puru, he got the throne. But it wasn't just because the father was pleased with him for that. It was actually, that was the statement of Sukracharya. Otherwise, then Puru would have gotten, you know, special, you know, care and attention, but the oldest son would have become the king. Right there. But it was stated that that's the way it is. So then, that's what's there. So it should also be authority, should be. Krishna continued. Hearing these words of the king, the Muni, controlling his outer senses, entered into meditation, sitting in the shade of that very mango tree where he was. And there fell upon the lap of the seated Muni a mango that was juicy and untouched by the beak of a parrot or any other bird. That best of Munis, taking up the fruit and mentally pronouncing certain mantras over it, gave it unto the king as the means of his obtaining an incomparable offspring. The great Muni, possessed also of extraordinary wisdom, addressed the monarch and said, "Return, O king, thy wish is fulfilled. Desist, O king, from going into the woods." Hearing these words of the Muni and worshipping his feet, the monarch, possessed of great wisdom, returned to his own abode, recollecting his former promise unto them. The king gave O Bulla the bar to race, unto his two wives that one fruit. His beautiful queens, dividing that single fruit into two parts, ate it up. In consequence of the certainty of the realization of the Muni's words and his truthfulness, both of them conceived, as an effect of their having eaten that fruit. And the king, beholding them in that state, became filled with joy. Then, O wise monarch, after some time, when the time came, each of the queens brought forth a fragmentary body, and each fragment had one eye, one arm, one leg, half a stomach, half a face, and half an anus. Beholding the fragmentary bodies, both the mothers trembled much. The helpless sisters then anxiously consulted each other, and sorrowfully abandoned those fragments endued with life. The two midwives that waited upon the queens then, carefully wrapping up the stillborn fragments, went out of the inner apartments of the palace by the back door, and throwing away the bodies, returned in haste. A little while after, O tiger among men, a Rakshasa woman of the name of Jara, living upon flesh and blood, took up the fragments that lay on a crossing, and impelled by force of fate, the female cannibal united the fragments for facility of carrying them away. O bull among men, as soon as the fragments were united, they formed a sturdy child of one body, endued with life. Then, O king, the female cannibal, with eyes expanded in wonder, found herself unable to carry away that child, having a body as hard and strong as a thunderbolt. That infant, then closing his fists, red as copper, and inserting them into his mouth, began to roar terribly as rain-charged clouds. Alarmed at the sound, the inmates of the palace, O tiger among men,
suddenly came out with the king, O slayer of all foes. The helpless and disappointed sad queens also, with breasts full of milk, also came out suddenly to recover their child. The female cannibal, beholding the queens in that condition, and the king too, so desirous of an offspring, and the child being possessed of such strength, thought within herself, I live within dominions of the king who is so desirous of an offspring. It behooveth not me, therefore, to kill the infant child of such an illustrious and virtuous monarch. And this is a Rakshasa. The Rakshasa woman, then, beholding the child in her arms, like the clouds enveloping the sun, assuming a human form, told the king these words. O Vridhadratha, this is thy child, given to thee by me. O take it. It hath been born of both thy wives by virtue of the command of the great Brahmana. Cast away by the midwives, it hath been protected by me. Krishna continued, O thou foremost of the Bharata race, the handsome daughters of the king of Kashi, having obtained the child, soon drenched it with their lacteal streams. The king, ascertaining everything, was filled with joy, and addressing that female cannibal, disguised as a human being, possessing the complexion of gold, asked, O thou of the complexion of the filament of the lotus, who art thou that givest me this child? O auspicious one, thou seemest to be as a goddess roaming at thy pleasure. Section 18. Krishna continued, hearing these words of the king, the Rakshasa woman answered, Blessed be thou, O king of kings, capable of assuming any form at will. I am a Rakshasa woman called Jara. I am living, O king, happily in thy house, worshipped all day. Every day I wander from house to house. Every day I wander from house to house of men. Indeed, I was created of old by the self-create, and was named Grihadevi, the household goddess. Of celestial beauty I was placed in the world for the destruction of the Danavas. He that devotion painteth on the walls of his house a likeness of myself endued with youth, and in the midst of children must have prosperity in his abode. Otherwise a household must sustain decay and destruction. O Lord, painted on the walls of thy house is a likeness of myself, surrounded by numerous children. Stationed there, I am daily worshipped with scents and flowers, with incense, edibles, and various objects of enjoyment. Thus worshipped in thy house, I daily think of doing thee some good in return. It chanced, O virtuous king, that I beheld the fragmentary bodies of thy son. When these happened to be united by me, a living child was formed of them. O great king, it hath been so owing to thy good fortune alone. I have been only the instrument. I am capable of swallowing the mountain of Meru itself. What shall I say of the child? I have, however, been gratified with thee in consequence of the worship I receive in thy house. It is therefore, O king, that I have bestowed this child on thee. Krishna continued, having spoken these words, O king, Jara disappeared then and there. The king, having obtained the child, then entered the palace. The king then caused all the rites of infancy to be performed on that child, and ordained a festival to be observed by his people in honor of the Rakshasa woman. And the monarch, equal unto Brahma himself, then bestowed a name on his child. He said that because the child had been united by Jara, he should be called Jarasandha. In other words, united by Jara. The son of the king of Magadha, endued with great energy, began to grow up in bulk and strength like a fire into which had been poured libations of clarified butter. And increasing day by day, like the moon in the bright fortnight, the child began to enhance the joy of his parents. So here another, so there's a Grihadevi. In other words, everything is all there. Means all these rules, they apply everywhere.
They applied before, they still apply today. So then, for the Grihastha, then the worship of the Griha Devi, the worship of, how do you say, the homas that they have to do, you know, in the morning, evening, the offerings that they have to do around the house. Like, there's, I think there's like 16 places that they have to offer food, you know, twice a day to all the various persons that make the house work. You know, at the doors and at the bed and at the, you know, all the, there's all these places. All this bali dan has to be done. All those are there, right? You have to worship the forefathers, the demigods. You have to perform your daily yajna. You have to study the shastras. You have to take care of, you know, guests. You have to give in charity to, you know, other persons. These have to be performed. You don't, there will be trouble. So, as devotees, then, because we are engaged in devotional service, you're worshiping the Supreme Person, then that automatically takes care, because he is the original person of the forefathers, right? We are in his line. He is the origin of the demigods. He is sacrifice. He is, you know, all living entities, right? He is the Shastra. Does that make sense? So by worship of him, all these duties are taken care of. Does that make sense? But the idea is, oh, we're devotees, we don't have to bother with this, and then we don't perform the duties of devotees, then how is the obligation being taken care of? Does that make sense? You know, you owe someone a debt. But they say, if you do this service, you know, for Krishna, I won't ask for the debt. Right? But if you don't do the service, how is the debt going to be taken care of? Does that make sense? That's the point. So when you're born, you have this debt. As long as you're a brahmachari, you know, then that debt is not worried about, because then you're under the teacher. Or sannyas, then you're beyond that, so you don't have to worry about that, because you're going for liberation, you're not going for the heavenly planets or material enjoyment. But as soon as you become a grihastha, that debt has to be paid. That's just the rule. So then, that has been simplified. So then sometimes it's amusing that devotees, the simple things that Prabhupada gave, oh, that's, you know, that's so many rules, we don't care for the rules. Like that. No. The rules have already been reduced. What little bit is there, that is the simple. That is what the devotees do. Now to take that idea that we are not, we don't care for the smartest, and now to apply that in Prabhupada, that would be inappropriate. Right? That would be foolish. The saying is that you sharpen the knife by rubbing it on the bark of the tree, and then to test if it's sharp, you cut the tree. So you didn't even know what ritual was in that. Then you find out what it is from Prabhupada, and then you reject it based on Prabhupada's principle of rejecting too much rules as smarta. Understand? So that's why we never speak too kindly about those who reject the rules out of being practical or other things like that. Because who gave them? Who told us to wash our hands, mouth, and feet after going to the bathroom? Right? Oh, don't be fanatic, Prabhu. Who told us? Simple things like that. Those are simple. Right? Technical is, you've already washed your hands, mouth, and feet in the bathroom. Okay. Washing your mouth, gargle 3 times, depending on what it was. If you, before you brush your teeth, you get up in the morning, you rinse your mouth 10 times to get rid of anything that's in there. Because when you brush your teeth, it might go into your stomach. It's been rotten in your mouth all night. Right? After you've brushed your teeth and cleaned your tongue like that, then you rinse your mouth 12 times. Some say 16. Some say until it feels clean. Because depending on what, if you use a neem twig, it goes very quick. You use, you know, medicinal toothpaste, a little less quick. You use these, you know, fancy tasting toothpaste, it takes forever to get them out of your mouth. Right? Does that make sense? Now we're starting rules. You know, you go to the bathroom, then having passed urine, you're still supposed to wash the genital 3 times with mud. And if you pass stool, genital three times, anus three times, left hand you do it seven times before you even touch this one. Then you do it 10 times together with the other one. Then you wash your mouth three times and your feet also with mud three times. Now do we want to say that it's smarter and it's fanatic to wash our hands simply with some water, rinse our mouth and feet after we go to the bathroom? This is my point. You don't even know what rules you've been saved from, and then we'll say, oh, it's fanatic. What Prabhupada gave us is something that something out of the gutters of the Western streets can follow. It's something the Mlechas and Yavanas can follow. Smartas, having done all that, high-grade Brahmas, having done all that in the bathroom, when they come out of the bathroom, there's water sitting there that someone else at the house who's clean now has to wash your hands, mouth, and feet with. Because what you washed yourself with was bathroom water. Even though it's clean water, it's mentally contaminated. So now you have to come out and purify yourself so now the subtle body is clean. And also, it's the proper grade of water. Does that make sense? That's the point. You have an Achman cup. We have one Achman cup sitting in our deity room. You're using the same Achman cup that the deity's using. That's simple. Right? Full Pancharatrik. You have your own Achman cup that doesn't even come into the deity room. You do your Achman outside. Then you come in, and then the water to wash your hands still isn't the water that's used by the deity. Right? And that's for just you want to wash your hands, so you have something for that. Right? Then you have an Achman cup you use for purifying yourself and the paraphernalia after you've made yourself up to the spiritual platform by mantras and mudras. Then you have another thing of water that's used for the deity. That's standard. Does that make sense? One Achman cup that you simply have to come in and somehow or another get three drops of water inside your mouth with some mantras, right? That's not fanatic. That's not rules. Does that make sense? So we always have to be very, very careful that what little bit Prabhupada has given is basically how much is very beneficial. Right? It'll keep the proper consciousness, proper standards of cleanliness, because we do have to remember Krishna is a person. He does have his standards. You know, we may not care, but he does. He is the supreme pure, so purity, he kind of likes it. Right? So this is the minimum. You do this, he's happy. Right? You know, just like if the little kid will somehow or another come there and, you know, their mouth and wash and kind of get the end of the toes wet, you know, then you go, wow, great, you know, he's trying. You know, but if an adult does that, mature, or an adult comes along and says, don't be fanatic, you know, not so, how do you say, endearing, right? Okay. Any questions on this? Anything else? No? Yes.
No, it's just what would you attend the eight qualities of the king?
Eight. Well, four were mentioned here. It's the different demigods. Like that, you know. Like Indra, his prowess, the sun's prowess. Indra, his nobility, the wealth of Kuvera, the dominion over others of Varuna. The like this, like that. I can check it out what it is, but it's a standard eight that each demigod has.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Hridaye Gaura Premanandi.
Thank you. the eight qualities of the demigods for the king. There's also eight qualities from the planets, nine.
Yeah, probably would be connected with the same ones. It'd be interesting, you could check them and see if they're matched.
I think that the qualities from the demigods would be how he does things, the qualities from the planets, what he does.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I think so.
Okay. Do you have them written down somewhere?
No, but just thinking.
Okay. But otherwise, do you know where they are?
Yeah.
They're written? Okay.
Do you know?
I know where the qualities of the king, the demigods are. It's in Manu, so I think you try to dig it out or something.
Hare Krishna.